The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The Biden administration's Department of Justice offering what critics call a sweetheart deal to a transgender vandal caught on camera smashing and spray painting a Catholic church in Washington state last year. NOTA also defaced the church's beloved statue of the Virgin Mary and spray painted a church worker in the face before resisting arrest. Despite those damages to the church, totaling nearly $100,000, the DOJ recommended, wait for it, zero jail time, and instead recommended just 3 years probation.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, welcome to Bizarro World, right? I mean, what universe, what alternative planet are we on? You probably heard that saying, right? If someone didn't have double standards, he wouldn't have any standards at all, right? Well, that's what we're seeing right here. That can be applied to the current Department of Justice. There was a 31-year-old man who thinks that he's a woman who vandalized the St. Louis Catholic Church in Bellevue, Washington. Right? Last June, when the Dobbs decision was done, went out, you just heard the audio there. He busted the glass doors at the church's entrance. He spray-painted some really vile graffiti all over the outside of the church, and he spray-painted a church employee in the face, as you just heard. I mean, that's assault, if you ask me. Destroyed a statue of Mary, resisted arrest. Okay, what kind of penalties, what kind of fines? He's been charged under the federal hate crimes law, the FACE Act, right? It's like, okay, well, that's fair, right? It's what the FACE Act is about, right? So you'd think this guy's going to get some jail time? No. The DOJ is recommending that the judge only sentence him to probation. To probation. That's it. Not a day. Do you remember what happened to Mark Hoke? You know, very minor altercation on the street. Somebody getting in the face of his kids, and he just wanted a little room between that aggressor and his child. And the FBI put him in shackles. They come into his home, terrorize his wife and his children, 30 armed guards, basically, coming in, weapons drawn, threatened him with 11 years of prison. Did Mark Hoke spray paint somebody in the face? You know, did he break out the glass, the doors of Planned Parenthood? Did he spray graffiti all over it? And the list goes on and on. I mean, this is the hypocrisy. This is the disconnect, right? When I'm telling you, it's so frustrating for me when I see what is happening today. Mark got in trouble because he was a sidewalk counselor. The difference between a vandal and somebody who's praying outside of an abortion clinic is pretty dramatic. You know, it's sad. Say a prayer for Mark. Say a prayer for this individual who clearly has got some anger issues and clearly needs God's grace. There's a bill under consideration right now in California, and this is another one of those bizarro stories, right? Gosh, why would anybody move to California? I know we have a lot of radio stations up and down that state, and there's some really wonderful people in California. I don't want to disparage anybody, but your leadership, oh my gosh. There's a bill right now that would emancipate minors at the age of 12. So what's that mean? That means that this bill would allow a licensed mental health counselor to sign off on a form saying that, you know what, your 12-year-old doesn't want to stay at home anymore, doesn't feel safe at home. So he should be able to go to another place to live, a group home perhaps. And once that child's there, you, the parent, can't do anything. Your 12-year-old, if he says, I don't want to be home with my dad, he's really angry all the time, or my mom is so mean, I don't feel safe. Once he's out, there's not a thing you can do. The bill's opponents, they're saying it's just another law kowtowing to the transgender agenda right now and virtually eliminating parental rights. And we have a war right now on parental rights. Another bill in the state that would have required the school to tell parents that their child wanted to be called by a different name or they have to be called by a specific pronoun. But the chair of the Assembly of Education, the committee there, said that he would not bring that up for debate. So a little victory, a small one right there. I had a call yesterday on the air from a mother whose child wanted to go through a transgender surgery. And the mother was a beautiful lady. I mean, just so compassionate, kind, really in agony over the turmoil and the decisions that her daughter is making. I'm just trying to get her head around why she would be going in this direction. And the mother was pretty definitive. She says, I'm not going to call you they, them, or whatever pronoun you want. I'm going to call you by your name. You want me to respect you, then respect me. And they came to terms on that. And I think that's fantastic. I've been praying for her. If you're listening, my wife and I last night, we offered prayers for your family. We really did when we prayed. It's my certain calls during the chaplet or during the show sometimes just really resonate with me. And I do feel a personal connection to you. I really do feel that we are a family. We spend time together every day, and we look at life, and we try to grow in virtue here. So just to give you a little bit of a different perspective, one of my daughters lives in Texas, and she moved to Texas after she got out of the Marines. And you take a look at Florida, take a look at Texas, take a look at Tennessee. Maggie had come from Tennessee. Very different cultures. You look at how wacky what happened in California was, or maybe in New York or some of these places, Seattle. There was a bill that was introduced in Texas that would require all classrooms in the state to display a copy of the Ten Commandments. So you go from losing your parental rights. Where would you rather raise your kid? In a place where you'll be stripped of your parental rights if your 12-year-old is upset with you? Or an institution of learning where the Ten Commandments. If we lived by those, the world would be a much better place, right? They're on the wall. You know, I think this would be a good, healthy step for Texas to bring back this tradition of recognizing America's religious heritage. Senate Bill 1515 restores a little bit of those liberties that were lost. That's what Senator Phil King said when he introduced the bill. Back in 1980, the Supreme Court struck down a Kennedy law that required the Ten Commandments to be posted in classrooms, and that ruling violated what they called the Lemon Test, but that test was recently overturned by the court. So we will see what happens. You know, you go into a lot of courtrooms and stuff, the Ten Commandments are there. Remember these big, we had these big, big battles over the Ten Commandments, you know, being in town halls and you know, out in public places, people were really upset at those laws. And again, that speaks volumes in and of itself, right? If they disturb you that much, there's got to be a reason for it. For years now, we've been hearing also about the population problem. You know, we are worshiping at the altar of the God of the environment, and not the one true God. Environmentalism has become another religion today. And I'm all about being a good steward of the planet, right? I really am, and I think we have to be. I think it's our duty. The UN and others have just modified the idea that this idea that we're going to ruin the planet because there's too many people, right? We're going to overpopulate it. Well, the UN has just come out, and they've kind of made a modification to what, you know, has been pushed. They say that the population is going to peak at about 10 billion. Right? Where are we now? 8 billion plus, 8.1 billion, I think. But it's going to peak around 10 billion around the year 2100. Then it's going to start to fall. So it's going to go down. But a new report challenges those assumptions. There's a group called Earth for All Initiative, and they said that, well, we just surpassed the global population of, again, I think around 8 billion. They believe we're going to peak at 8.5 billion. In 17 years, or 8.8 billion in 27 years, and then the numbers are going to fall back significantly. You know, I'm not worried about it. If God gives, life is a gift from God, right? It is clearly a gift from the Creator. And if He's going to allow life to proliferate, then we're going to have advances in our technology where we can feed everyone, where we can protect the environment, where we can do different things. We cannot be worried. We cannot go against God's natural law. Right, we can't kill children in the womb. We should not be contracepting. We shouldn't be doing these things that are antithetical to what God wants. Right, so I think that's good news. You know, demographers, I've had them on the show in the past. Some disagree. If you lose people, you lose economy, and that's really what happens. It has a profound impact. Depopulation really has hurt a lot of different nations. Hey, another story. Very early this morning, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals issued its ruling on an abortion pill case out of Texas. I don't always deal with these court cases. I try to dial back from them. I know they can get kind of heady, but this is a big one. This is a huge case you should know about. I don't know if you remember back on Good Friday, there was a federal judge in Texas. They put a stay on the FDA's approval of, Maggie, help me with the drug. Is it Mifepristone? I can never get the word out. What are the two drugs that are used in these chemical abortions? So the FDA, of course, appealed the stay, that stay, and the Fifth Circuit has mostly upheld that stay, though there are parts of it that weren't upheld. But the FDA and the Department of Justice have just announced that they are appealing the ruling to the Supreme Court. I'm joined today by Senior Counsel Alliance Defending Freedom. His focus is on administrative litigation and regulatory advocacy. He's a lead attorney in this case. His name's Eric Baptiste. Good to have him with us today. Hey, Eric, thank you for your time. Good afternoon.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, unpack this. Maybe explain what this ruling is all about, what previous rulings have led to this, and why this is significant for those who don't follow this.
Yeah, this case is all about women and girls have been harmed by chemical abortion drugs because the FDA has refused to follow the law to the detriment of the health and safety of women and girls, and let alone unborn life. And so what the district court has done, and now what has been affirmed by the Federal Court of Appeals, is that what the FDA cannot do is knowingly violate the law by refusing to follow congressional mandates of how to determine safety of new drug approvals and to distribute dangerous chemical abortion drugs.
So hey, Eric, we are happy and pleased. Eric, can you hold the thought one second. We're getting a little bit of disruption in our connection with you here today. I'll have my producers check on that. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Eric Baptiste. He's lead counsel on a decision that the Fifth Circuit ruled that abortionists are no longer allowed to send chemical abortion drugs through the mail. The FDA has been allowing that since 2021. And a number of other things as well. We're going to go through a few of those just to get you up to speed. The battle for life continues. Eric, thank you for your patience. So I'll let you pick it up there. We had some distortion. Is Eric back with me? Okay, we're going to still try to connect with him. So what's the bottom line on this? Here's what's also happening here. So you can't send these chemical abortion drugs through the mail. Also, in 2016, the FDA extended the permissible gestation age of a baby for which a girl or a woman could take a chemical abortion. They moved it from 7 all the way up to 10 weeks. They figured they could kill a few more babies that way, right? So the Fifth Circuit ordered that move back to 7 weeks, and it'll protect the mother from all those adverse complications that increase as the child, gets older in the gestational stage. It also reinstated necessary doctor visits. It brought back the requirement that abortionists must check women for complication after chemical abortions. And a lot of other things. So I'm joined once again by Eric Baptiste. He's lead counsel on what is a huge, huge ruling here. Eric, I'll let you pick it back up. I'm sorry about that. Like, as I said a moment ago, we had some distortion on you. So if you could just reset, that'd be great.
Yeah, I apologize for that. So what the FDA did was reckless and unlawful because it approved a dangerous chemical abortion regimen to the detriment of health and safety of women and girls across this country for decades now. And we're happy to finally have the courts. Now, multiple courts have ruled that we are correct in the sense that unlawful, reckless agency action must be held accountable by our courts here in this country. So it was a great outcome. And this is important because over 50% of all abortions now are performed by chemical means, not just surgical means.
Wow.
And the Biden administration has gone full force into trying to push these drugs by mail without ever having a doctor involved, without ever having an in-person medical examination to determine if there are any life-threatening complications. And so this is a great victory for America and for especially America's women and girls.
So what do you where's this going to go? You think it'll make it all the way up to the Supreme Court? What's going to happen here?
Yeah, we expect the Biden administration to go probably today to the Supreme Court and beg for the court's intervention here. We will happily and readily meet the Biden administration every step of the way in this litigation, and we will meet with the courthouse steps of the Supreme Court. And we're confident in the case because the facts and the law are clearly on our side. Now, two courts have affirmed our case so far and saw how reckless and unlawful the FDA's actions have been, and we are confident that the Supreme Court will agree with us as well.
Just for some perspective, how dangerous are these chemical abortion drugs? Are a lot of women losing their lives? What's happening here with them?
Well, luckily, because we have a great medical system here in the United States, women aren't dying in great numbers. We have at least 28 documented deaths so far with this drug. But our doctors are frontline doctors in our case who we represent. And they can tell you story after story about women presenting themselves in the emergency room with life-threatening complications where they have to be resuscitated multiple times And but for the intervention of these emergency room doctors, these women would have died.
Yeah, and just back to the law for a moment here, too, if we could. If you want to join us, our number is 888-914-9149. So the government has appealed this to the Supreme Court. How quickly do you expect them to pick it up? And will they hear about the time-barred portions of the case?
Well, what I expect is the court to kind of act very quickly, because the district court's decision will go into effect come end of day tomorrow. And so if that happens, which we hope it does, that means these drugs can no longer be mailed across state lines, undermining those states that want to protect life and women's health, such as Texas or Mississippi, where they have these laws. The states of California and New York and elsewhere have tried to subvert those state laws by mailing them across state lines to undermine those state laws. And so we hope that goes into effect, and we expect the Supreme Court to rule pretty quickly on this, but it's going to be an interesting outcome, and hopefully the court agrees with us.
Well, thank you for what you're doing. If people want more information, what's the best way to connect?
I say go to adflegal.org. Our website has a lot of information on our lawsuit, all of our court filings, and I really encourage folks to read about this case and read about the 25-plus years history of this drug and how politics trumped over safety and science.
Yeah, it's final thought on that, because I think that's really an important point. Women's health, right? It was trumped by a political ideology. That ideology is still pretty rampant today. I almost feel like it's getting stronger. Where do you see it right now?
Well, we call it the abortion distortion, where the FDA is acting out of character, where it had to call pregnancy an illness to justify the approval of this drug back in the late 1990s during the Clinton administration. So you can just see, like, what is happening. You ask yourself, how did this happen? It's just because the eyes of the FDA are kind of blurred when it comes to abortion.
It's crazy, the blindness that we are seeing. Hey, Eric, thank you for your time. Keep up your good work. Appreciate it. I wish you the best success there as lead counsel on this.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your prayers and support.
You got it. We'll be praying for you. That's Eric Baptiste. Say a prayer for him. And this is a huge case. Put it on your radar. You'll hear much more about it. He's senior counsel there at the Alliance Defending Freedom. You can check them out at ADF. I believe it's ADF.org. Coming up in a moment, Congressman Dan Lipinski is going to be stopping by. I want to get his take on this as well. But here's my thought on this. How disconnected are you? Right? Do you feel like, who cares? Has your attitude changed? The polling is really very telling about where people are when it comes to the issue of life. And I want to talk to Congressman Lipinski about it. I mean, we recently had that Supreme Court race up in Wisconsin, right? You saw what happened up there. I missed the boat on this. I mean, I tend to believe sometimes I can see things in terms of trends and movements and where things are going. But what I'm seeing is shocking me, and that's a rise of people who want more abortion today. And it is affecting the vote. Look what happened in our Congress, right? Look what happened between the Senate and the midterms. Take a look at what's going to be happening in the next election. Is abortion, is it a wooden stake? Is it a stake in the heart of those who are for life? If you are a candidate running on the life issue, is that a death knell? Should you stay away from it? Should you water down your position? Apparently anybody who has embraced that ends up losing. So how do we win on that front? And why is America going in that direction? When we come back, former Congressman Dan Lipinski will be joining me. He actually got primaried because he took the position. I'm standing for life. I think he's a heroic man. We'll get his take on that. I'll take your calls, too. Feel free to join me right after this.
Your news, the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Your news now.
Hey, today we'd like to thank Jim, who's listening to us in Missouri, for donating his Ford Mustang. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles by visiting relevantradio.com/car. That's relevantradio.com/car.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
A little Eurythmics there. All right. Good to have you with me today. Thanks for joining me. We are about 35 minutes away from the chaplet. Send somebody an email, a text, a tweet. Tell them to join us coming up in about 35 minutes. Day 7 of our Novena of Chaplets, leading up to the Great Feast of Mercy. Tomorrow, I am going to so dive into the Great Feast Day. It's one of my favorite days. I'll get you plugged into everything the Lord revealed to St. Faustina about that day. Extraordinary, extraordinary promises on that day. It is such a great day. So we'll get you plugged in and get you ready for that, okay? Hey, if you're just joining me, do me a favor, too. I think Sunday, Divine Mercy Sunday, the Lord had asked St. Faustina, he spoke to her about 14 different times. She recorded 14 different entries in her diary regarding it. He says, on that day, the floodgates of his mercy are open, right? There's extraordinary graces. He says he'll pour out a whole ocean of graces, an ocean. Think about that. I think on that day, whatever you ask for, I think your prayers are amplified. I think God hears them in a powerful way. And please pray for our country on that day. I know you're going to be praying for personal things, but I really want you to pray for our nation and for our nation's leaders, for the threats that loom against us internationally, for the problems that threaten us internally. Right? Our country is in desperate need of prayer. It really is. And I think Divine Mercy Sunday is a great day to ask God for mercy on this country. Last week, the people of Wisconsin, right, they went to the polls and they elected a judge to sit on the Supreme Court. And I had one listener say, hey, not everybody voted for her. And you're right. You're absolutely not everybody voted for death, but the state did. And that's the unfortunate part. They vowed to, they elected a judge to sit on the Supreme Court that has vowed to rule to allow abortion in the Badger State. I mean, I would not want to stand before God after making these decisions. Ever since the Dobbs decision overturning Roe v. Wade was handed down, abortion has technically become illegal in the state of Wisconsin, in the Badger State, because they had a law in the books from all the way back in the 1800s. And that automatically went back into effect. Like I said, technically legal, right? Because the governor there, Tony Evers, he told the administration not to enforce it. So you got a governor, you got a high-ranking government official saying, ignore the law. That's not the way our nation is supposed to operate. He also filed a suit to rescind the law. That suit is going to be heard by the Supreme Court with this this judge, Janet Protasevich, now on the Supreme Court bench. Liberals, by the way, now will outweigh in that state conservatives 4-3. So Protasevich, she ran against a conservative guy named Dan Kelly. She beat him by 10 points, right? 10 points. So that defeat now has Republican Party leaders all across the country. I told you this was a huge case when I talked about it a couple weeks ago, a huge election, because it has the Republican Party scratching its head. Leaders all across the country now are wringing their hands about next year's presidential election and the role abortion is going to play in it. Is abortion a millstone around the neck of a candidate? Should they stay away from it completely? Do you downplay it? Do you agree to exceptions? Do you compromise? Or do you continue to speak truth and stand tall even though you may lose? But if you lose, the consequences are grave. We see what's happening in the halls of Congress. We see what's happening on the executive branch. We see when these individuals have power, the other type of indoctrination and poison that they bring to the country and to your kids. See, right now, the experts, as we're looking at this, they believe that the Democratic candidates are going to be beating the drum on abortion. That's what they're going to pound. And they're probably right about it. We promote life. They promote death, right? They promote abortion. Republican leaders are worried about it. And if they hold to a hard line on abortion, they may not get elected. We saw that with the Supreme Court. 10 points is significant, right? The midterms, I really thought, based on the economy, how bad this country was going after Afghanistan, after all the things we saw, right? Oh, there's going to be a landslide. People want, they want lower gas prices, lower eggs. They want interest rates to come down. They don't want inflation. They don't want hyperspending. I was wrong. I was totally wrong, man. I missed that completely. What did the Dems do? They chanted about abortion and how it's in jeopardy if we don't get into democracies and, you know, they all these buzzwords they use. South Carolina Republican Representative Nancy Mace, she said after the Texas ruling on the abortion pills, she says, if we can show that we just care a little bit, If we can show we have some compassion, we can show the country our policies are reasonable. But because we keep going down these rabbit holes of extremism, she says, we're just going to lose. Now, I'm not sure how abortion can be considered compassionate, but she's certainly expressing a mainstream view right now. The New York Times reported that Dan O'Connell, a conservative radio host in Wisconsin, he says, as difficult as this might be to come to grips with, Republicans are on the wrong side politically of an issue that they're clearly on the right side of morally. And I just thought that was such a great line. Republicans are on the wrong side politically of the issue that they're on the right side of morally. So how do you remedy this? The first person that comes to my mind is Congressman Dan Lipinski. He knows this better than anybody. He formerly represented the 3rd Congressional District in Illinois as a Democrat until his party said, nah, we don't like your pro-life position. So they primaried him. He's now a distinguished visiting fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University and the pro-life, or Pope Leo XIII, I should say, fellow of social thought at the University of Dallas. And you can check him out, danlipinski.com. He joins me today. Congressman, thank you for your time. And again, I just want to applaud you for standing up for your values, even though you lost your particular seat. Thought of you today when I heard this story. Well, what do you make of it? After Wisconsin's loss, a lot of Republicans are kicking themselves and saying, wait a minute, we might be too conservative on abortion. How do you read the waters?
Well, Drew, it's good to be with you. It's a shame what happened in Wisconsin in that race, but the same candidate, Dan Kelly, lost by the same, by 10 points, 10 and a half points 3 years ago also when he ran for Supreme Court. He was not a good candidate in Wisconsin. The issue of abortion, you know, I said this before Roe was overturned. I used to tell pro-life audiences that I'd speak to, I said, if Roe is overturned, you unfortunately are going to find that some of the politicians who you thought were your friends are not really your friends. And I think we've seen that. I think there's a lot of supposedly pro-life Republicans who ran away from the issue as soon as Roe was gone. Look, I represented the 3rd District for 16 years as a pro-life Democrat. And in this past election in the in this district, every single Republican who was running in the primary said, oh, no, abortion's not a federal. When they're asked about abortion, they said abortion's not a federal issue. It's a state issue. And I mean, that to see that after I stood up in the Democratic Party for 16 years being pro-life, to see all the Republicans running away from it. And I said at the time, I said that is not only morally wrong, it is politically a disaster, because you cannot pretend like you can't just stick your head in the sand. You need to talk. If you are pro-life, you need to talk about it and explain why you are pro-life. The Republican who won that primary, mm-hmm. ran in that district, was attacked over and over again for being a pro-life extremist. I'm not even sure. I don't even remember what they used to right. say that. So he was running away from the issue. He was still attacked on the issue. What we need to do yeah. is we need to make the case for why we are pro-life. I think that's the first thing, the most important thing, is make that case. I think that obviously, well, we know the news media is not on our side. But even in Wisconsin, there's a story that just showed up in Politico.com saying that some of the people who worked on that race for the Democrats said, well, abortion isn't necessarily a panacea. It was, we use that to help in with other issues to paint Dan Kelly as an extremist.
Well, let's take a broad view outside of Wisconsin as well. I mean, honestly, if you go back to the midterms, this has become a millstone around the neck of the Republican Party. I think it cost the GOP several very close races in the midterms, especially in special elections. And polling now is showing that people are tilting, voters are tilting decisively in favor of permitting abortion in most circumstances, which to me is kind of crazy. But the landscape no longer favors pro-life candidates. So, you know, what do you do when you run? I mean, how do you get your message out? Do you stay away from this? I mean, I know you say we've got to say why, we got to sell the message of why we're pro-life, and I could not agree with you more. But right now, the Dems are very effective of creating fear that, you know, the right to abortion is going to be taken away. And we see America apparently buying it as these poll numbers continue to shift.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think that's the case with the poll numbers, and as I've always said, we all along we need to win the hearts and minds of people. What politicians, what candidates need to do is look. I suggested in a piece that I wrote for America Magazine late last year. I said, look, on the federal level, I think that there should be, the proposal should be, the bill should be a ban on abortion at 15 weeks with the exceptions for rape, incest, and in the life of the mother. Some others have argued with me that maybe 20 weeks is better, but that is all that we can get. That's the only thing that there's a potential to get at the federal level anytime in the near future. So if you're running for a federal office, you need to make the case of what you're for, or else your opponent's going to say they're going to pick out some bill that was proposed in some state somewhere and say they are an extremist. They want to outlaw all abortions. Now, look, the tough part is I am pro-life, and this is a life that needs to be protected. But at some point, we have to understand the politics of what is possible right now. And so I think that is very important. Now, Ron DeSantis, Governor DeSantis, is facing this issue in Florida, where the state legislature passed a bill to ban abortion at 6 weeks. And people are saying, well, this is going to hurt him running for president. But, you know, that is a conundrum for Governor DeSantis. The people of Florida support that ban at 6 weeks. Across the country, though, that is not something that people support right now. So he needs to decide if he's running for president what he's going to do. There are people who are listening who are going to be saying, you got to go 100% ban all abortions right now. I understand that. That is what I am, I support, but we need to be politically smart about what is possible.
I totally agree with you, and that's really a dilemma. Let me open the phones. If you want to join us, feel free to sound off. I only have Congressman Lipinski a short time today. The number to get in is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Feel free to sound off. NBC recently ran an analysis on how abortion changes election maps, concluding the fact that, the issue of abortion is handing the suburbs to the Democrats. And the Democrats have been incredibly effective in making now every electoral race into a referendum on abortion. And when conservatives start giving up seats in the White House based on that one issue, you end up losing on a lot of other issues as well. The Dems are going to end up controlling the country's policies on everything from border security to taxes to transgender treatments. I mean, we already seen what a lot of these liberal policies have done. But, you know, Congressman, here's my frustration. I mean, I eat, breathe, and sleep this stuff. I'm surrounded by it all the time, but most Americans are not. Do they understand the gravity of some of these policies? And, you know, why is this issue so sacrosanct to the left? And how do Republicans move away from it and talk about fiscal responsibility or, better policies at the border or some of these other issues?
Well, you have to talk about, all of these issues. It's very tough. if you are a if you're running for office, you don't necessarily in your pro-life, you don't necessarily lead with that issue, but you don't run away from it either.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a difference between making that your the issue that you lead with, and just saying, it's a state issue if you're running for federal office, or you somehow else just run away from the issue. So obviously these, look, I spent 99% of, more than 99.9% of the time probably was spent on other issues other than abortion.
Yep.
When I served in Congress.
Yep.
But that's the issue that was used used against me. And I didn't, I talked about what I did for that other, the 99.99% of the time, and talked about those issues, but I did not back down from being pro-life, and I let people know where I stood.
Yeah, I respect that so much, and I say that all the time to you. Let me do this. We've got a couple minutes. Let's grab a few phone calls for you. Johnny is listening in southeastern Wisconsin, and he's got a comment for you. Johnny, hi. You're on the air with Congressman Dan Lipinski.
Hi. Thanks, Drew, for taking the call. Great to talk to you, Congressman. I completely agree with what you're saying. I had a local politician walking around. Actually met Dan Knodel, the state senator, last year, and we had a conversation, and I encouraged him to double down on his position of being pro-life, because I don't think politicians do that enough. I think what we need to do is politicians need to use their platform, show that it's coming from a place of compassion, because a lot of times politicians are demonized as extremists or hating women and children. So go on site, visit a crisis pregnancy center, show people with your platform what that looks like, bring people to your events that you're speaking, and talk about the stories of those who have chosen life. Talk about those, spotlight the lives that people have had, the wonderful lives that people have had that chose life. And I think that we need to go on the offense a little bit more. We can't, like the congressman is saying, if we back down, they're still going to be demonized for it. So embrace it and show people to convert their hearts and minds.
Yeah, well said. Congressman, I'll let you respond.
Right on target. That is what we need to do. That is who we are, and we need to show people that we are pro-life because we are compassionate. And don't let the other side paint us otherwise. But that's what we do when we don't talk about it. We don't talk about why we're pro-life. We don't show what we are doing, and we don't do those things.
Yeah.
We need to do those things. We are the pro-life movement in general.
That's right.
Is doing so much to help women. The crisis pregnancy centers, so much more, maternity homes, everything that is done to help pregnant women make the right decision is something that most people don't know anything about it, and we need to be very, very clear and be more public about it. And I also think, and I know there'll be some disagreement from Republicans, and this other point I made in America Magazine is I think there should be more that the government can do to help pregnant women and families especially with small children, whether it's tax credits, whatever it is. I think that is important also. The government, especially in the tax code, does a lot to encourage behavior. Certain types of behavior, oftentimes in business. Well, how about helping pregnant women and families with little kids? And that should be part of what being pro-life is, and show people that's what we care about.
After we sign off with you, Congressman, in a few minutes, there's an individual out there who's trying to raise 2 million diapers for this very point, to help these crisis pregnancy centers, one of the world's biggest diaper drive, and I'll get everybody plugged into that. I only have a moment or two left, and there's a lot of people that want to talk to you, but I'm just curious about what you expect for the Republican National Convention to look like this year as this debate heats up. I mean, next year we're going to be into this pretty deep. How do you see this issue playing out? Some final thoughts for you.
Well, it's going to be very interesting. I'm concerned that the Republican Party, there certainly are Republicans who want to run away from the issue.
Yep.
The party can't do that. I know that there are a lot of people in the party who will not allow the party to run away from it, but there's going to be a lot of discussion going on behind the scenes about how best to handle this issue. Hopefully it is the party comes out and does what the what I've recommended here. Yeah. I'm also hopeful that there's still pro-life Democrats out there.
Amen.
And I got to keep supporting them, and still more talk about Joe Manchin running as an independent right now.
Yeah, we'll see.
And Joe Manchin's been a pro-life Democrat for many years in the Senate, and I would love to see that.
It'd be good. I'd love to see him throw his hat in the ring, that's for sure. Hey, Congressman, thank you. Keep up your good fight, keep teaching, and look forward to the next time we talk.
Thank you, Drew.
God bless you. That's Congressman Dan Lipinski. Stay with me. We come back, and he brings up a great point. We got to show that we love, we care, we've got some compassion. I just came across a story that I want to share with you, and you can help. You can be part of this. Part of the world's biggest diaper drive. This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, live, coming up. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, here's a fun, interesting story. Even though the left paints pro-lifers as being uncaring people, right? It's not the case. You know they care both about the mother and the baby. That's why pro-life pregnancy centers provide things like strollers and bottles and clothes, right? They even pay rent payments and money for utilities for these struggling mothers. They also provide diapers, and lots of diapers. And every day in our country, tens of thousands of mothers, and I was just really shocked when I heard this, they have to reuse diapers because they can't afford to purchase enough and keep their kid clean and dry. So, in fact, in the stat I saw said that one in three families need help diapering their babies. I just take it for granted, right? Oh, put a diaper on, right? Diaper banks can help, but they need help keeping their stocks up. So Tim Welsh, he's decided to do something that I just think is a great idea, and I could not applaud him more for this. He founded an organization, he actually heads up Bottoms Up Diaper Bank in Columbus, Ohio, and he started the world's largest diaper drive in an attempt to get 2 million diapers donated in a week. 2 million. So I want to get you plugged into it. It's worldslargestdiaperdrive.org. That's the website. You can learn more there. Tim joins me right now to fill us in on what's going on. Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. How are you, Drew? I appreciate that intro. I'm honored.
Well, I love what you're doing. We just spoke with Congressman Dan Lipinski a little bit about, why the country is tilting towards this culture of death. And one of the things that came up is that we need to show compassion. We need to let mothers know there's alternatives, that there's help. They choose life.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be hard for them. You know, there should be support for them. And your idea of something as simple as just getting diapers, something I take for granted, is fantastic. So first of all, give me a little background on these stats. Like, why do so many mothers have to resort to reusing diapers? I never heard of that. I don't even know how you do that today.
Well, it's a fact that when you can't afford enough diapers, there are not a lot of ramifications for the living poor. I mean, if they take their child to a daycare center, they're supposed to have a day's worth of diapers with them.
Oh.
Otherwise, the daycare center is supposed to turn them away. And when you're making minimum wage, that makes a real big difference. And mothers just don't. They don't have the resources. We got a call from a woman just last week that she had to renew her driver's license so she could get to work, of course, and it was going to cost her $60. Well, she had to make a decision, you know, and that decision was I can't afford to buy diapers. You know, diapers can cost up to 50 cents a piece in some cases, depending on the size and the number you purchase. So,
right. Or drive without your license and get tagged and pay a lot more money in fines, right? It's an unfortunate dilemma they find it. Explain how exactly. These diaper banks work. What's a diaper bank? How does it work?
I didn't even know they existed 4 years ago. We started this thing. I told my wife, we were celebrating our 40th wedding anniversary, and I said, why don't we try to get 40 boxes of diapers delivered to us from friends and family.
That's great.
One for each year we've been married. It was in August of 2018. And we got about 90 or 95 boxes delivered to our front door. And I said, you know, we should just keep going. So we started identifying organization partners, we call them community partners. They're food banks, child care facilities, domestic abuse shelters, certainly pregnancy centers, where anywhere they may intersect with a woman living below the poverty line, we wanted to give them free diapers. And that has grown to, 4 years ago, I was delivering diapers out of the back of a Prius. Today, we operate four vehicles that we own. And we're delivering somewhere in the neighborhood of 85,000 to 95,000 diapers a month.
Wow!
In 16 counties in the state of Ohio.
Well, that's wild.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Just as a side note, I mean, I never thought about it. I have five kids, and we went through a lot of diapers. I'm sure. How many diapers does an average baby go through? A week or a month, or I don't know if you have any data on that.
Well, I've got one piece of data that's pretty astounding to me, anyway. By the time they are, from the time they're born to the time they're potty trained, the average number of diapers they use is anywhere from 6,000 to 9,000.
Wow, that's a lot of diapers.
Yeah, it's a big number. And, you know, we, 3 years ago, or I guess it's only been 2 years ago, I really had this kind of nutty idea that we would just have what we call the world's largest diaper drive. Now it's trademarked, but...
That's great.
But at the time, we just said, you know, let's try to do this. And I said, let's try to get 250,000 diapers donated in one day. And as it turned out, we got like 360,000. Then last year, I said, well, you know, it's obvious. Let's punch that up to 500. Let's make the goal 500,000. Now, this is just for bottoms up. This is just for our little territory here. Yeah. And so we got like 570,000 or something. And then this year we've punched that up to 750,000.
And your goal now is to get the $2 million donated, or 2 million diapers donated in 1 week?
Well, that includes 10 states that we're actually in 10 states now.
Okay.
And that's just opened up by word of mouth. We just in the last 2 weeks we went from being in two states to being in 10.
Well, we reach a lot of states here. So let me ask you, we only have a couple minutes left here. Tim, don't mean to cut you off.
No, that's fine.
How can people help? They might be in a state where maybe they don't have a diaper bank. They just go, online to World's Largest Diaper Drive to find out where they're located? And what if they don't have one in their community? How do they help? How do they help these crisis pregnancy centers?
Well, worldslargestdiaperdrive.org. They can, you know, there's a place where they can donate. They can support it financially. They can scroll through the states and see if there's a state in their state where there's a diaper bank that they can support with diapers. My email is real simple. It's tim@bottomsup.life.
Right.
And it's real simple. They're welcome to reach out to me as well.
All right. Araceli is listening in the Bay Area. She's got a question for you. Hi, Araceli. You're on the air with Tim Walsh.
Hi. I would like to know how I get started doing the same thing.
Oh, great.
Just drop me an email, tim@bottomsup.life, and we'll get you started. It takes
Tim at bottomlife.com?
Yeah, Tim at
bottomsup.life.
You got it. All right. Sounds great.
Tim at bottomsup.life.
You got it.
Yep.
Thanks, Araceli, for your willingness to help. Tim, I wish you the very best in this. I hope your 2 million becomes 4 million. I hope women know that they're loved and cared for and that having a child is a blessing, not a curse.
Absolutely.
I think it's fantastic. So it's worldslargestdiaperdrive.org. That's where people can go for more info, right?
Yep.
All right. Well, keep us in the loop. Let us know how you do. All right, I can't wait.
I will. Thanks so much. I'll let you know by the end of May how it all turned out.
Hey, God works in mysterious ways. You start by doing something charitable. You planted that small seed. Let me, you know, get forty boxes of diapers, and soon there'll be millions of diapers on babies and in the households of you know, mothers all over the country. So God bless you. Appreciate what
you're doing. we're just trying to stay out of the way and let God do His work.
Amen. I love it.
All right.
I love it. It's so great. Thank you, Tim. That's Tim Welsh, and again, you can check him out at worldslargestdiaperdrive.org. Maggie, let me ask you very quickly, if I could. What's that saying? God qualifies the – I ask you this all the time because I can never remember the phrase.
He doesn't call the qualified. He qualifies the call.
I love that. And I think of Tim when I heard that, right? That's what ended up happening. He ended up giving this guy an opportunity, saying, hey, I'm grateful for your charity, for your generosity. I'm going to use you in a powerful way. So, Lord might be calling you to do something great too. Say yes. When I return, we will pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. It is day 7 of our novena. And if you want to get in, here's the number. I know the phone lines fill up pretty quickly. It's 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Put that in the speed dial. Maggie is standing by on Twitter. She'll take your intentions as well at Drew Mariani Show. We'll be right back.